Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 98, Software We Hate. Here we go. Joining me today is once again my go-to man, my number one, Mr. Jason Perlow. How you doing, Jason?
What up, Rickatron?
I'm honest with you, man. I'm totally fried this week. I'm so
is
glad
it?
It's Friday, yes.
I'm very glad it's Friday. I'm just getting over a call that I got when I went to Seattle last week. And, you know, and then I took the red high home, you know, and it's like, you know, you realize getting from Seattle to South Florida is not, that is a haul.
You're better off going to Brazil.
Yeah, exactly. And I got sick and, you know, and you know, this time of year, Seattle is not the most pleasant city to be in because it's cold, it's rainy, it's gloomy. So not only do you feel like, you know, suicidal after the week, you end up getting sick.
Yeah.
Especially if you're from a warm climate.
Right.
So I'm just finally getting off of that sick feeling, and then I had to head back there on Monday.
Oh, so
3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, I saw your tweet about getting your seats sorted out, so it sounded like you're going back, yeah.
It's amazing, though. You know, you can't get anything done with Delta and the customer reps on if you call them on the phone. But, man, if you start bitching and complaining on Twitter, stuff happens.
You know, I got to give props to Delta Assist on Twitter.
They kick ass.
They do definitely take care. And you know what? You don't even have to be a high status flyer.
No,
that's the best part.
No.
Yeah, so I have good status, but I've sent stuff through for my wife's itineraries. They'll get it all sorted out. They're good. They're good people. Yes.
I was sitting just, you know, in the room, you know, just like, you know, on conference calls all day, and then my wife walks in with a really, really depressed look on her face. She's like, Jason. I need to talk to you about your seats. You're in the middle on one leg, and you're in window seats for two
man.
Other. I'm like, no. It's not even economy comfort. You're like in the back. I'm like, well, how did this happen? I had good seats. Well, you're like, you had an equipment change. I'm like,
yep.
Well, but they can't do that to me.
He's
like,
no.
Apparently, I'm like, they apparently can.
Yeah, they do that, and a lot of airlines do that. The little trick I've found, and it's hard to do this, but if you get a seat number that's the same kind of profile on every aircraft, you're good. Like a good example, if you get upgraded, is like 4A or 3A, because that pretty much exists on every aircraft type as an upgraded seat, right? So I've had that happen where, you know, now there's two less first class seats and your seat number's gone. Oh no, what do they do? Well, anyways. Long or the short, let's get into software. Good to hear that you're busy. Same here, as are we all. Now, Jason reached out to me about a new thing that he is not liking. Dare I say he's even hating it. Conduit, potentially unstable or untrusted software, I think you called it. What got you started on all this, Jason?
Well, you know, a funny thing happened to me last week, and you know, I had been hearing about Conduit over the last couple of weeks, and I kind of dismissed it because I figured, you know, I'm a safe surfer. I don't get malware, right? You know, it's very, very rare that I get malware. Although I do not practice what I preach. I do run my PC in administrator mode, what you probably shouldn't be doing. But it's very rare that I get infected. And if I do get infected, I just nuke the machine from orbit because I have all my storage and everything is on, you know, NAS and in cloud and all that. So I can restore my box pretty darn quickly. My main box.
Backups are amazing when you need them, eh?
That's why I back everything up. You know, I replicate everything. I never ever lose data. But, so, this week I had to get one of these utilities, you know, to make essentially a Blu-ray ISO file, a really big, you know, 30 gig, ISO so I could burn it to disks. And this is something a thing I had to put together for some customers. I didn't have one of these utilities lying around, so I went out and I searched and I, you know, I looked at a couple, and one of the ones I downloaded was Power ISO. Now Power ISO is a legitimate piece of software. It is not, you know, malware in and of itself. It's a software product that's been in use for at least I think 10 years. You know, to do exactly this sort of thing, which is to make the ISO files for you to burn, you know, if you need to master something. And I installed it, and then over the next day or so, my network is screwy, everything's really slow, and then I suddenly noticed that my homepage on my IE is now search.conduit.com. I'm like, what the heck? And I'm looking this up, and there's apparently this software called Conduit. And Conduit is one of these, you know, sleazy companies that essentially partners with these shareware vendors to package their software in the installer of the shareware. And it basically has deep hooks into your operating system, so it actually can override DLLs. It can, you know, it'll add toolbars and stuff. It'll slow your computer down. But the problem is that all of the antivirus software out there does not detect it as malware.
Interesting.
Yeah. So you remember Bonzi Buddy back in like the 90s?
Oh, I saw your video this week. I'm going to put a link to that. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Remember, yeah, well you had the little you know, purple monkey that would talk to you in Windows 95.
Yes, I remember.
And it would completely destroy your machine. It was like almost impossible to remove.
He was fun and cute in your video.
Yeah.
But other than that, I don't want any part of it.
You don't want that on your machine, man. So basically the problem is that one is like, whenever you install share, you gotta be very careful what you're doing. You know, because when you go through these wizards, like they'll have like little check boxes, you know, install this and this and this and this, and you're like, okay, next, because you don't want to be bothered to read what you're installing. So there's some social engineering in place. So your average computer user is probably saying, okay, just installed the whole thing, you know, whatever, go bang. And before they know it, they've got like three or four pieces of unwanted software in their machine. You know, with cookie trackers and you know, redirecting your homepage to some other company's search site, which is redirecting search traffic, and it's slowing your computer down, and you got all sorts of junk going, and that's just really sad. But the problem is that it used to be that shareware companies could make money selling shareware, and now they can't do that anymore. So what they're doing is that they're partnering with these companies like Conduit, and they are really distributing malware. So they're getting a cut of the search traffic.
You mean there's no money in Ask Jeeves anymore?
No. Uh-huh. And the thing is that you would think that, like, if you paid attention during the installer, you would actually catch this thing trying to install something on your PC. But in actuality, they will actually install this without your permission.
Mm-hmm. I've had that happen, you know, I've had this happen. It's jacked up browsers. Where'd that bar come from? And I never really looked too much into it. But, you know, the real risk, Jason, I think, you know, your example with a Blu-ray authorware is one situation. I think the real risk is on data center server workloads. Imagine the risk on this.
Oh, my gosh.
The running of server service accounts, the amount of data just hooked onto, you know, domains and stuff like that. Practical tip, everyone, no shareware on servers, period. I don't care what you're trying to do.
No.
I mean, barely even do it on a jump box, but I mean, imagine the risk in that situation.
Huge, huge liability there. Yeah. Huge liability. And of course, you know, Conduit, of course, is not the only problem. There's lots of other crappy, you know, malware that isn't really identified as viruses. But of course, we've all heard about CryptoLocker, right? That thing is evil. Totally evil. And it happens because of bad, essentially social engineering. You know, you click on a link in an email, and then suddenly your entire computer is encrypted and jacked by whoever it is. And then they basically extortion you to give them a couple hundred bucks before you can get your computer unlocked. Otherwise they'll delete everything on your system. Or effectively it's unusable because they've now encrypted your data so you can't get at it without their password.
No, that's really scary, actually.
Which is why it's really, really, really important that you back up all your stuff. You don't use your hard drive as your primary source of backup. You should get yourself USB hard disks and copy them to that. You should be using you definitely should be using Microsoft BitLocker for your own personal information. And also you should be using cloud services such as SkyDrive or Google Drive or any of the others that exist out there. And they're also, of course, replicating backup appliances, for example, like Transporter. I've been using one of those. That's a great toy. I recommend that thing highly for anybody who's got, you know, a couple of business PCs and they want to share data across multiple systems privately. Mm-hmm. And that thing just basically, you know, replicates all my download and work directories. And so I've got a copy of that, you know, offline, you know, in case my computer gets blown up.
So, you know, let's talk about that for a second because, you know, I honestly, Perlo, don't know much about, like, volume encryption. You mentioned BitLocker.
Yep.
How does BitLocker work? I know, you know, it's not really what we're talking about, but if you had to kind of explain it to someone in the elevator, how would you explain it?
Yeah, so BitLocker is if someone actually steals your computer, if your drive is BitLocker encrypted, there's no way that they're going to be able to access that data without a security key. Mm-hmm. So you can, if you can log into your computer and you have the password, you can get in. Mm-hmm. But if someone literally tries to rip out your hard drive from your PC and put it into another PC to try to access the data, they're not going to be able to do it.
So it's like a volume level encryption that's on Windows 7 and higher, is that right?
That's right.
Okay, cool. So for, you know, the listeners out there, if we're scaring the crap out of you, all right, which is a very distinct possibility with Mr. Perlo, everything he does is in extremes, and I love it. And that's one easy way you can knock out a big piece of risk. So there you go. We always have practical tips.
Especially if you have customer confidential information that you carry with you on a work laptop. And you definitely should be BitLocker encrypted because, God forbid, you know, you lose your PC in an airport or something. You want to know that information is completely unusable to anyone who finds it.
Oh, absolutely. Personal information, work information, credit cards, even, you know what, even kind of secondhand stuff like a backup of an app, a VHD file from the data center.
Yep.
You know, the risk is so great nowadays, and we're all so connected. Anyways, know thy data, eh?
Yep.
So, yeah, back to the risks and all of this, you know, how do you, other than just not install anything, what do you do?
Well, I mean, you certainly should not be using, I should practice what I preach. You shouldn't be running your Windows PC as a administrator, first of all. You should be an end user. I mean, you can have, of course, your administrator account, but I wouldn't run your PC as an administrator. I would run as an end user and then elevate privileges accordingly if you know what's going on. So, like, if you install a piece of software and you know it's a safe piece of software, mm-hmm. like, say, from a major ISV or something, and it says, this needs privileges to install, and then UAC user account control comes up and you answer yes, that's what you do.
Right.
But you have to be very careful with what you're doing with all kinds of shareware these days.
Oh.
Because fortunately BitLocker Conduit appears to uninstall cleanly. Appears to. Yeah, I mean you have to go to add remove programs and find it in there, you know, search.com whatever it's called. And then you got to delete it. So what you really should do, I would say on a weekly basis, a good best practice is to go into your add remove programs and sort by date and see what's been installed in the last week. And if you don't recognize something, remove it.
And then put it back if something doesn't work.
Yeah. Because a lot of times, you know, a lot of us, we download a lot of stuff, we test a lot of things, a lot of utilities and programs that we get for whatever reason. I would say actually, you know, if you can afford to virtualize, another copy of Windows or an operating system specifically for testing software, mm-hmm. I would do that. Because,
well, yeah, and it's built right into Windows 8, right? And then.
Yeah, if you have Windows 8 Professional, you can, in fact, run Hyper-V Client.
Yep. And then, you know, I love the data center idea. In fact, when I used to work at the other place, we didn't have a VDI deployment, but one of the things we'd always do when we'd roll out a new quote-unquote image we had a call center that we supported. So we had let's just say hundreds of users that needed a very consistent and very simple user profile. It was all pushed through group policy. This was a Windows environment, yep. right? That's how you do it. That's the enterprise thing to do. We would always test it. I had a virtual machine that had a whole bunch of scenarios, right? We had some that were the very old image and just make sure it updates and keeps going in time, right? But then we had some that were fresh and new and then everything in between. And then we had our playground, right? So you'd always test these things being deployed. Virtual machines are a great way to do it. They don't have to stay running. You don't have to dedicate hardware. If you're talking about the native Windows 8, you can even slip it in right on your own PC. Of course, server. You can run it on VMware, pretty much anything you want to do. Now, this is kind of a sideways question, Jason. Do these types of risks exist in the Linux world? I think there are in the Mac world, for that matter. I think there are malware risks out there, but I'm not familiar with.
Well, I mean, actually, you know, interestingly enough, that conduit software does not affect Chrome on Windows or obviously or on Chrome OS. Because it's the way that Chrome is designed, it essentially runs in a virtual environment. So it is essentially, Chrome is a good browser for messing around in, let's put it that way. Mm. I think I use it exclusively for when I'm using Google's, online services and things, because I just find that their stuff, their Gmail and their G+, their stuff just runs better in Chrome.
Oh, absolutely.
It just does. So for the most part, Linux is immune to these things, mm-hmm. Mainly because the default way that Linux runs, if we're talking about something like Ubuntu, for example, that it's a least privileged environment. So and nobody runs as root unless you elevate yourself to root.
Right.
So whereas a lot of people by default run Windows as administrator, which you really should not do.
I
do because I don't want to be bothered with elevation prompts.
Right.
But I mean for your family and friends, don't let them run as administrator.
And
don't give them the administrator password unless, you know, there's a reason for it. And like keep it around for them to call you on the phone or email you. But like, there are certain people I would say that are in my family, they should not have an administrator password. Should not have one.
We all have been there, right? You go home over the holidays and it's like, hey Jason, can you check out my computer?
I'm actually dealing with this problem right now. My father called me at like 7 o'clock in the morning and he says my hard drive is dead.
Oh boy.
I'm like, okay. So of course it's, can I drop the PC off this afternoon? So right after I get off this call with you, I actually have to prep his box.
Nice. Well, we've all been there. We all do it. Now it's phones and TVs and anything with a power outlet, pretty much, I guess, we support, right?
It's getting too complicated, though, because, like, you know, do you realize what it's like to give an Android phone or even an iPhone to, like, a 65 or 70-year-old person?
They can't handle that.
They can't handle it.
Yeah, I know. If you put Facebook right in the top, they're usually good. Okay.
Yeah.
But beyond that, and then they install stuff and PCs same way. But the phones are actually, you know, the phones you can wipe, and most of the phones are built
in
cloud-based, you know, profiling services that'll bring your contacts and your photos back. You know, that's good. But yeah, you know, there is no. I don't know if they can handle the iPad, though. You know, most of them can handle an iPad or a tablet. By the way, I love my Surface RT, even the first one. I love it. I still use that thing every day.
I just gave it to my wife because I just bought a Surface Pro last week. I just got it in this week because mm-hmm. they're on sale for $500, the original one.
Yep, I saw that. And I missed it, though.
Yeah. Are they not on sale anymore?
In the States here, we had a profile or a special with Best Buy that was $500 for one of them, and that was the Pro.
The Microsoft Store also has them online. Also, they may have some left.
Hey, good. Hopefully, there's maybe there'll be an on-event special at TechEd, which I'll be at this year, and I'm looking forward to maybe buying one like I did last year. And I got just an incredible deal last year on my RT, and I love it. Absolutely love that thing.
Anyway. Yeah, I gave it to my wife. She's going to be using it now as her kitchen cooking PC, the Surface RT.
That's what I do with it. And at the house, we have a nanny. She enters in all the kids' stuff there, so it works out great. Does that brings up a good question, right? So some of these other variants of Windows, right, like the RT and such, I wonder – for shareware, they really have those same risks, right? Or in these
Well, actually, on the ARM platform, you not really, because you know, for the on RT, the only way you can install software is through the Windows Store. So, I mean, if you think about it, a lot of these shareware sort of you know clickjacking type of things are going to go away, because like as we move more towards a Windows Store based model for Windows applications, right, where it has to go through an auditing process before these things can ever be deployed,
right?
You know, it's going to be less painful going forward. So it's really the legacy stuff from on desktop that's really the issue here.
Well,
you know?
And that's also Android has a mechanism for that. So does Apple, and I don't have a Chromebook, but I would imagine that would be kind of the same thing. You have to do an explicit thing to take them in sideways, and I don't even know if you can do it on Apple's products. But yeah, if that's the bigger shift, that would be a safeguard to this particular situation.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Interesting. Good thought. So, you know, look for things that show up in your add remove programs. Figure out what happened, including removing them, and see if something breaks. Look at the date. Any other practical tips? BitLocker is a good practical tip on this.
Don't run as administrator.
Don't run as administrator. Do you remember the days, Jason? I'm sure you do. Whenever I'd install a new Windows system, I did two things for all systems. First thing, PDF reader. Acrobat
yep.
reader. Second thing, WinZip.
Actually, you know, I use a much different. I use different PDF reader now. I don't use Adobe's program anymore.
Okay.
Because
okay.
I just find it too resource intensive. So there's a new one that I use called what is it called? Not QPDF. There's another one that I use. My
I use that to now. Write PDFs. Yeah.
Yeah, was it
PDF viewer? I know what you're talking about. Foxit.
Foxit reader. PDF. Yes, that thing is awesome because
right.
it prints and it reads, and it's fairly low resource.
Really, I'll keep that in mind. Remember installing WinZip back in the day?
Yeah, I use 7-Zip now.
Well, me too. Know? But I was checking WinZip out. They have like a ridiculous amount of stuff. They got encryptors. They have. Cloud options. Well, they're on version 18, right? They had to keep thinking of things to do. Malware extractor or protector, I should say. All kinds of interesting things. An Android app, believe it or not. So
really?
It's kind of funny.
Huh.
I've like stopped it, but I was just thinking about this. I'm like, well, what did I used to do back in the day? I used to do WinZip. Well, they're still at it. So I was checking them out. Maybe I'll do a personal blog post about that. Anyways. Well, hey, Perlo. As always, this has been a great episode, as usual. Love your food picks. Love the Tech Broiler blog. What is it? ZDNet.com/Perlo, right?
That's right.
Yep. And very varietal there. Always with an opinion. Definitely recommend you guys check out the Tech Broiler blog. Any other projects you're working on besides that?
No. I'm well, of course, any other projects I'm working on, if I told you, I'd have to kill you.
Ooh,
so.
You like it. Yes. Well, same here, actually. It's going to get a little bit more top secret for me starting first of the month next. So,
Well, congratulations.
Yeah. Anyways, well, Perlo, once again, thanks for being on.
Thanks, dude.
That's a wrap.